Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Kurdistan Connection podcast with myself, Matt Broomfield, here on Media News. As listeners will know, in this podcast, we try to put the political situation in Kurdistan in its broader geopolitical context in terms of what's going on in the wider Middle East, and also by speaking to people active in European and international politics about those connections. This is, I suppose, becoming easier and easier because the crisis in the Middle East shows no signs of abating and is growing and spreading with new events and new challenges breaking out every day throughout the region. And it's becoming increasingly important to think about all these issues altogether and to look at the Kurd situation in Kurdistan, the powers that take an interest in that region, and the political movement there and what it's trying to do. So to that end, I'm very happy to be joined today for the second time on the show by a former Minister of the Interior for Iceland, Ögmundur Jónasson, who has a long career in domestic politics, also in European politics, and is a long-term friend and supporter of the Kurdish movement. Has spent a long time working with the campaign for Öcalan and visiting different parts of Kurdistan as well. So perhaps we can begin then. I know you've recently been in Kurdistan. Where were you, or what were you doing, and what did you see?
Well, I visited Basur, the Iraqi Kurdistan, and I was part of a delegation, a small delegation, organized by the KNK. And we had the co-leader of that movement, Zeynep Monrad, with us. Apart from me, there was Jürgen Klute, a former member of the European Parliament, a German politician. And there was supposed to be another delegate from South Africa, but he could not make it due to visa problems in the end. So there were three of us, Zeynep, Jürgen, and I myself, who visited Basur towards the end of January, the last week of January. We finished with a press conference on the 1st of February.
And what were your findings? Were you looking at the internal political situation in Basur? Were you looking at the region's relations with Turkey? Who were you speaking to, and what were they talking about?
Well, the objective of our mission was to emphasize two points. Firstly, why it was necessary to restart the peace process in Turkey by allowing Abdullah Öcalan to come to the negotiating table again. And secondly, there must be support for halting the atrocities committed by the Turkish army in the border regions. We know of the atrocities committed in Rojava, but also in the border regions with Iraqi Kurdistan. We were asking for support on these two issues.
So maybe let's take the second issue first. Could you expand a bit? So what was the impact of Turkey's military operations that you saw in this region? Why is that an issue of international concern?
Well, let me start with telling you what I learned on this mission. I learned a lot. I learned about the difficult position of Iraqi Kurdistan under pressure from all sides, from Turkey, as we know, from Iran as well, who do not want a free Iraqi Kurdistan to become a good model to look towards by Iranian Kurds. So they are always looking for ways of undermining the Kurdish federal state in Iraq. And then, of course, it's Baghdad, which also wants to undermine the state, and they are doing their bit by they are in charge of payments to employees of the state, like teachers.
Yeah.
Teachers had not got paid since November, to take an example. So all around there is hostility, and this undermines the authority of the state. And this is something one must understand when one starts discussing other issues. Now, you ask about the atrocities in the border regions and how this all hangs together. You see, we put forward something I would call the domino theory. You said at the beginning that there was no sign that the fighting or the war in the Middle East was abating. And this poses danger for the whole region and for the whole world, indeed. So we must unite in finding ways to direct this into a more peaceful direction. And here comes the domino theory. You must start somewhere. And we are saying that, the domino theory was used in the 60s, 70s, saying that one country that falls to communism or under communism will lead to the next fall. In other words, war leads to war. We are wanting to turn this around and say, let us look at it this way. Peace here may lead to peace there. And we are saying, if we can start in Turkey, this will eventually have a good effect throughout the whole region. And are we certain that this will do so? Of course we aren't, but the likelihood is there. And why can we say that? We can say that because experience tells us we can safely say that. In the years 2013, 2015, as you know, there were peace negotiations going on between the Kurds and the Turkish authorities. And at that time, Abdullah Öcalan was at the table, indeed, from his prison cell in İmralı, but he was at the table. And there was optimism in the air. And I came to Ahmet during this time in 2014, and I remember the message read out from Öcalan at a huge rally, a million people. And he said, we have shown that we can handle war. We can handle war. But we have also shown, and this we are longing to do, that we can also handle peace. We can also handle peace. And I have come to the conclusion that he is the only man who is to be relied on in this respect. Not that there are not other people who can be relied on, but he is the unequivocal leader everybody looks to. So in that respect, he is a key person to conduct peace talks. So back to your question, how is all this interlinked? Well, it's interlinked in this way. A peace process in Turkey will eventually lead to the end of atrocities committed in the border regions. And this, in the end, will also benefit Kurds elsewhere, in Iraqi Kurdistan, in Iran, and elsewhere. So, peace is what the Kurds want.
As you've said, of course, the hope is that democratic reforms, Kurdish presence at the negotiating table could create a positive domino effect. It's not certain by any means. Is there also a possibility that in the polarization in the region, the Kurdish movement could be pushed into confrontations that it doesn't want to seek, that America could seek to push it into confronting Iran, into confronting Iraq, and due to their non-state status, they are forced to become a pawn in this conflict?
Well, there is always this tension. This tension has always been there. And if we only look at the situation of the Kurds in Rojava, where they are supported by the Americans. Why? Because it serves American interests. Americans originally supported ISIS. They gave support to ISIS. But when ISIS became too strong and started to get control of oil, that support waned and they looked to the Kurds, the only force able to deal with ISIS. So south of the Turkish border in Rojava, Americans are friendly towards the Kurds and have supported them. North of the border, the NATO state, Turkey, is to be asserted against the, to be supported against the Kurds. And their terrible atrocities have been committed. And I refer especially to what happened in the years 2016, 2017, where the People's Tribunal in Paris in 2018 termed what happened there as crimes against humanity. Now, not a word from the United States there, you see. And so the big powers operating from afar, they are never to be relied on. And that applies to all these, for all these international forces. They are always looking, what suits me? What suits me? Now, the Kurds tried to stick together, but they are having difficulties when it comes to the border regions with Iraq. That's something we all know. And that was the idea of our visit. We should concentrate on finding ways to have these attacks on the Kurds in the border regions come to an end. And we found, when we spoke to people all around, we met people from all parties, and the general feeling is very much to this effect. There were those who pointed to the difficult geopolitical situation or difficulties, complexities, and we understood these, but in their heart, everybody wants these terrible atrocities to come to an end.
And so, yeah, as you've mentioned, one perhaps crucial step that could come towards bringing an end to these military operations, toward hostilities along the border, also in Rojava and also in Bashur, would be moved toward renewed negotiations in Turkey. But probably right now, this looks further away than it has done at any point in the past years since negotiations collapsed. How can...
Well, may I interrupt you there, Matt? May I interrupt you there? Because you are right. It seems that they are further away than before because of what is happening in the region. But at the same time, they look nearer. They could be nearer. Things can change very quickly because I think people understand that you know, we are in a truly dangerous situation. The whole world is in a truly dangerous situation. And if people become aware of this, things can change. And another thing I want to say, if I may add it, you see, I think suddenly with what is happening in Gaza, you take Gaza, you take other places as well, but Gaza, you know, some people wanted us to see it as history started on the 6th of October last year. That's when history started with an attack by Hamas, and then response by Israel, etc. But then gradually it turns upon people that history didn't start there. The Jews indeed have their history. The Palestinians have their history. And in order to understand the situation, one must look into the historical dimension. The same in Ukraine. People have tried to tell us that history started at the end of February 2022 with, as it is always phrased, unprovoked Russian invasion of Ukraine. That's when history started. But now people are beginning to say, wait a minute, did history start at that point? No, of course it started much earlier, and we must look into historical dimensions to understand the situation. But what about the Kurds? Don't they also have a history? And this is very interesting, I think, that after all the discussion about Lausanne in 1923, you know, there was a lot of discussion in connection with the 100 years anniversary of that meeting, and people are going back to Sèvres, you know, when a Kurdish state was in the making, and then it was wiped out with Lausanne. What I'm trying to say is this: people are becoming more aware of the historical dimension of the Kurdish situation, as is happening in Israel, as is happening in Ukraine. And this is a key factor. This is a key factor which is going to help the Kurdish cause a lot. Ergo, what I'm saying, things can change very quickly, even if
Kurdistan
seems far away.
Your sense is that maybe what's happened in Gaza has provoked a reassessment also for people outside of the internationalist left about Israel-Palestine, and more broadly a reassessment of the Middle East and a renewed understanding that it's not good guys, bad guys, and that there are other paths forward for the region.
Correct.
So when you, this weekend, I know you've been at some events to do with the 25th anniversary of the detention of Abdullah Öcalan. In conversations you had there, the other speakers you heard, was there this sense among people that changes that are happening in the region could throw up unexpected benefits for the Kurdish movement or for Öcalan?
Well, I think... you know, people were trying to assess the situation at this conference in Brussels, and here again, the historical dimension is of importance. You see, on the plane when I came to Brussels, I had to land in from Iceland to in Copenhagen, and there was a young woman on the plane with me. She was from Sweden. Now, why was she coming to Brussels? She was coming to Brussels to visit her Kurdish friend who had been evicted from Sweden last November or December. And he managed to get to Belgium and was in Belgium. And I asked, were other Kurds evicted at the same time? Yes, many of his friends, and they were deported to Turkey. And what happened to them? I don't know, probably in prison, because they all had some political background. And why was this happening? I said, oh, you know, of course, Sweden wanted to get into NATO. And there were these problems with the Turks there. And then my mind, and this I mentioned at the conference, went back to 1999, when Abdullah Öcalan was abducted. And who were the abductors? The Turkish intelligence, Mossad, the Israeli secret service, and of course, CIA. And I mentioned this, and I mentioned this at the conference, and I mentioned this here as well, to draw attention and remind ourselves that this is the context we are dealing with. You know, it's not just Erdogan and what he wants, at that, whether he wants to come to the negotiating table as well. It is those who have supported him and created the situation we are in. And here, of course, I look to the Americans in particular, but I also look to NATO. I look to NATO because when he was forced to, Abdullah Öcalan was forced to leave Syria in 1998, no NATO country wanted to receive him. Well, originally they wanted to. Italy wanted to. Greece wanted to. Even Russia wanted to. And you see, Russia at the time was flirting with NATO, with Yeltsin in power. And so this is the context we must bear in mind. Nothing will happen if these forces are not touched somehow by us. Who are we? I'm talking about the public. So I'm saying, and this was very much the spirit of this seminar, that what we need is a general awareness raising amongst the public to move these dinosaurs of the past still living with us. I'm talking about the European Union, I'm talking about NATO, I'm talking about the United States. These are all responsible, and they will do nothing unless we, the public, make them do it. And this we can do by increased awareness amongst ourselves, look into history, what is happening, bringing to the forefront the hidden wars in the border regions. So that was the general impression there. And therefore, it was wonderful to come to Cologne last Saturday and experience a huge rally. The German police estimated 50,000 people. They are very modest in their evaluations. They are known for being that. They are not modest in other respects, but when it comes to counting people at demonstrations, they keep very low. We think it was 100,000. Or let's settle on 75,000, 80,000. Anyway, it was a huge rally, and the spirit was good. And we see now that there are numerous gatherings all around in Britain, Manchester, Edinburgh, London, throughout Germany, everywhere. So this is what is to be relied on. The Kurds themselves, of course, and a general awareness raising amongst the public.
Yeah, certainly, and articulating this third way alternative and some of these criticisms can be challenging. It's a task which the Kurdish movement certainly takes on, and as you say, it's important for those of us in the international left to engage with these issues as well. That's more or less all we've got time for. I don't know if, maybe just to finish, you've shared a little bit, if you have some kind of final reflection, maybe a speaker you heard at the conference, a conversation you had, an impression from over the weekend that you would like to share.
Well, I only say this, that it may seem that an acceptable solution to the Kurds is far away. But the reality may be otherwise, because things may change very quickly. But one thing we must always bear in mind, that things do not change of their own accord. They're always doers, and we are the doers. The public of the world, we are the doers, and we all have a responsibility to try to move things into the right direction.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Ögmundur, for joining us today and sharing your analysis, which it's always useful and inspiring to hear. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
This has been the Kurdistan Connection with myself, Matt Broomfield. Until the next broadcast, goodbye.